So I make careers out of saying the same things over and over again. You may have recognised that, some of you. God is always sovereign. God is always good. We always do what we most want to do. Lots of other things that I say regularly. And it was the same when I was a teacher. We get to arguments. You know, historians haven't got anything better to do with their time, so they argue with each other about interpretations. And I was with a sixth form class once, and I said, right, we're looking at Nazi Germany. Are you an intentionalist or a structuralist? If you don't know what that is, don't worry, it's boring. Which are we going for, guys? And they went, it's a bit of both, sir, isn't it? It's always a bit of both, certainly in your lesson. Because every time when we had these historical arguments, I say, it's a bit of both. There's more nuance to it than that. You've got to find the balance. And that's true of life, isn't it? We've got to find the balance. We kind of got to avoid extremes. That's what the teacher's talking about there in verse 18. But just before that, you might have been kind of a bit shocked by verse 16 as he goes into verse 17. Don't be over-righteous. Don't be over-wise. What's he talking about that? Why would we raise our eyebrows at that? But when we get what Solomon's saying to us in this chapter, it's absolute dynamite. Because he's saying, look, as we cope with this life of breath, we fall into one of two camps, one of two cliffs that we fall off either side of the straight path. Sometimes we fall off both sides, not usually at the same time, but neither are good for us. Because Solomon, the teacher, is saying to us in these chapters, in this chapter, when faced with life as it is, life as breath, life as vapor that we can't grasp, that's gone before we know it, we're either tempted to be an escapist or we're tempted to be a theological know-it-all. The teacher says, if you want to live life as it is meant to be, if you want to be wise, you've got to find some balance. Neither be an escapist, neither be a theological snob. Find that balance. Those are essentially the two main lessons we're going to learn this evening. We're going to learn, we're going to rest, and then finally we've got some outworkings of how they transform our living. So, let's dive in then. And let's see, first, we need to learn. A few of us, the blokes here at Hope, spent Friday night sat in the cinema watching Logan. If you're squeamish, don't go and see it. But one of the problems at that film was there was a group of, well, kids, I suppose, maybe 15, 16, and they'd paid £8 to go in and see this film. For the first 20 minutes, they sat there on their phones. You could see the lights lighting up. And then after that, they just talked. Completely ignored the film. Until my next door neighbour, who's the bouncer at the cinema, yes, they have a bouncer at the cinema, came and kicked them out. And they seemed shocked to find they were getting kicked out of the film, despite the fact that they'd talked all the way through it, after paying £8. And as Solomon here returns to that stark theme, do you remember that theme that we've been going through all the way through this book so far? You will die. He says, so often in life, we're just like those kids. Because we don't get this fact, we want to run away from this fact that we are going to die, we go through life ignoring the good gifts that God has given to us because we never imagine we're going to get kicked out of this life. We like to think it's just going to carry on and do what we want. So the teacher says to us again here in this chapter, these first six verses especially, he says, you will die. And while that's not good, death is not good, getting your head round the fact of it is. He's saying again that only when we fully grasp the fact that life is breath and that we will die, will we ever learn to live usefully, joyfully,
sacrificially.
Just look here at verses 1 to 4. A good name is better than fine perfume. What's the point smelling like roses if everybody wrinkles up their nose whenever you walk into the room? Because you're an horrible person. It's better to have a sad face, verse 3, than it is to have a happy face. Sorrow's better than laughter. You'd expect me to agree with that. I even read a book this week that said in it, Graham, feel happy. What's he saying to us here? He's saying this. This is what how David Gibson, a pastor from Aberdeen, phrases it. What Solomon's saying here. The day of death is better than the day of birth. Not because death is better than life. It's not. But because a coffin is a better preacher than a cot. When life ends or is about to end, absolutely everything else comes into focus. The things that don't really matter, but which we gave so much time to, now seem so empty and pointless. The lives we touched and the generosity we showed and the love we gave or received now mean so much more. That's what Solomon's saying here. But we don't like to think like that, do we? That's not the pattern of thinking we fall into naturally. Because we're tempted, teacher says here, to escapism. We're tempted to try and forget that one day, quite likely, soon for some of us, whether we're old or young, we will die. We say, don't talk about that. That's a bit morbid, isn't it? Especially don't talk like that in front of the kids. They don't need to think about that, do they? And so we try to escape that thinking, that fact, in all kind of different ways. Teacher goes through some of them here for us, doesn't he? There, verse 7. We try and get loads of money. We try and get loads of power over other people and comfort. It'll be all right if I can make life comfortable enough. I can forget about death. Or verses 8 and 9 there, we do it through impatience and anger. Because we're essentially saying all that matters is now. I want it all and I want it now. Forget about tomorrow. Don't think about the future. I want now. Or perhaps we try and escape from the horror of now. Verse 10, we get drawn into nostalgia. Trying to escape the misery of now or the thought of future death by dwelling on memories that, let's face it, are so much better than they actually were at the time. Or looking forward to that utopian future we've constructed for ourselves when we'll be better looking. Be married to someone better looking. Have more money. Have more friends. Have more power. The teacher says it's all pointless. Verse 6, it's like thorns under a cooking pot. They make a lot of noise, but they don't actually give you much heat. They don't do what you need them to do. And they're all gone too soon. The teacher says, look, unless you grasp this, you're just denying, you're just putting off the inevitable, and it wrecks your life now. Think back to that TV series Fame. I don't think I'm quite old enough to remember it. But do you remember? They were young, they were invincible, they had leg warmers, and they were going to live forever. And yet a few years ago, did you remember? They did a remake. They were going to live forever too, but they had to get different actors. Because those original actors don't quite look as young and intelligent, and the leg warmers don't fit in the same way, especially not the leotards, anymore. Because we ain't going to live forever. We ain't invincible. We're not young for that long. Essentially, what the teacher's telling us here is this. I'm going to go to a funeral in a few weeks. And he says that there's going to be two types of people at that funeral. Using his words, he says there's going to be a fool who thinks, this is horrible, this is miserable. I can't wait to be back out in the sunshine where it's nice. Or at the pub where I can drink enough to forget about it. And then there's the wise person who will look at that coffin and think, do you know what? One day, I'm going to be in there. And so ask themselves, when it's my turn, what will my life have been worth? The teacher tells us that death preaches a sermon to us. That we and the ones we love are finite. You can't love the people you love forever. You won't love them forever. So get on and love them now while you still can. Again, as we were thinking with Warren this morning, he's just saying to us, imitate Jesus, who spent his entire life knowing he was going to die. Think of what it must have been like for Jesus to go to synagogue every week. From when he was a tiny little kid and sing Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? They've pierced my hands and my feet. What it must have been for Jesus to go to synagogue every week and sing Psalm 88. That seemingly has no hope. That promises that he will be cut off from his father. Think of what it must have been like for Jesus to sit at home or as he learned each week at synagogue and read Isaiah 53. And yet, knowing that didn't make him morbid or ineffective or sad. It made him all the more determined to squeeze every drop out of life. To fulfill every aspect of his mission. To live full out while he lived. Think about it. It kept him focused, didn't it? Knowing that he had limited time meant he didn't go around healing everybody. He said, my business is to preach the gospel. He stayed focused on preaching, pointing others to himself, pointing others to the cross. It kept him loving. Knowing that this was the reason he was there and he wouldn't live that long. And so he loved those around him. It kept him interested, and we can almost say normal. Because he didn't retreat into some kind of protective shell. But knowing that he would only be with these people for so long, he enjoyed spending time with them. Eating and drinking with them. Laughing with them. He didn't spend all these nights sat alone reading the Torah and thinking how holy he was. He invested in people. And so the teacher says, follow Jesus. Give yourself and others, including your kids, the chance to learn this lesson. Go to a funeral. Talk about death. Let death preach you his sermon. Let death teach you wisdom. Be wise. Don't be an escapist. Live today, not with one foot in the grave, but always with one eye on it. And let life take on new meaning. Learn. Be wise. But then he comes to his second point, because the teacher says, don't expect to understand everything. Wisdom isn't everything is cracked up to be. You can be wise in knowing that you will die, but wisdom isn't going to tell you everything. Because he also says, secondly, rest. Because we said this at the beginning, didn't we? It's like walking up that mountain, a path with cliffs down on either side. He says there's another cliff to fall off here. You don't be so busy avoiding escapism that you fall off the other side. Don't be the person who thinks they've got the answer to everything. If you've got a problem, they've got the diagnosis. If you've got a question, they've got the answer. They've got life sewn up because they're wise. I never do anything so stupid as trying to escape the reality of death by having too many beers, partying all night, or storing up so much money that I feel secure. But the teacher says that wisdom has limits. It's not enough. It's not going to tell you everything. What does he say there, verse 24? Whatever wisdom may be, it's far off and most profound. Who can discover it? I turn my mind to understand, to investigate and search out wisdom and the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. He's saying, look, I tried to be as wise as I possibly could, but verses 13 to 15, it's not going to tell you everything. God is God and you are not. You won't understand everything. You're not going to understand the reason for everything. So stop trying. Get that balance. Get that perspective. You know, do you remember a couple of weeks ago, Storm Doris? You know, everybody just, we just imagine, don't we? We get in the car, we go for a train. Well, I was going to say we expect it to work, not on Trans-Pennine Express, but on some things. We get on a train, we expect it to go. We've got it all under control. And then it gets a bit windy. And suddenly everything falls apart. Transport doesn't work. Insurance bills go up. And a 29-year-old woman ends up in eternity. That's what the teacher's saying in verses 13 to 15. All the wisdom in the world, verse 14, can't tell you what the future holds. And it certainly can't tell you why things happen like they do. Wisdom can tell you that God is in control and that he's good, but that's about as far as we're going to get. You can't tell what God's purpose is when 38 people die in a cyclone in Madagascar. Or when a teenager stabs a little girl in our county. Or when a respected Christian leader takes their own life. Why a family member gets cancer. Or the redundancy letter comes. Why, verse 15, do gangsters drive Bentleys and Christians in Syria are tortured and beheaded? Teacher says we can fall into the problem of thinking wisdom will solve it all. If I just know more, if I just learn more wisdom, I'll get it all sorted and I'll know what I'm talking about and I'll be able to go through life just chilled out knowing God's got it all under control. And once I've got it all sorted, I can look at those around me and I can help them. By saying that if you just showed more wisdom like me, you'd avoid being such a mess. That if you just stopped being so emotional and actually thought things through for a bit, or you actually showed some emotion when it's sad, or did this or that. Frankly, if you were just more like me, well, you'd be fine, wouldn't you? The teacher says, get that balance, get that perspective. Just look again at verses 15 to 18. What he's saying in there. He shows us two positions, doesn't he? He says, verse 16, he says, look, don't be over-righteous, don't be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? We kind of go, what's he going on about there? Here's what he's saying, I think. He's saying, don't be a fool who thinks they know the answer to everything. You just end up destroying yourself because you can't work out why something happens. When it happens to everybody else, you've always got that pat answer. You always stand up quickly and with no context say, Romans 8:28, folks, it's all fine. And then when it happens to you, you fall on the floor and you're despairing because you don't know why. Or you just end up annoying everybody because you're a mouthy know-it-all and they all have that wry little smile when you come crashing down to earth. Don't know if that's your heart. It's certainly been my heart on occasion. But then he goes on to the other side, verse 17. It says, don't be an idiot who think you can escape the complexity of life by just forgetting it all, chilling out and partying. You'll just end up dying inside when you realise it ain't going to cut it. And you'll probably end up dying on the outside when your liver or your heart starts to give up eventually as well. He says, accept your limitations. You can know that you will die, but you can't know when. You can know that you think this is the right thing to do today, but you never know what tomorrow will bring. You can know that things happen for God's purposes. But apart from God's purpose to make you more like Jesus, you're probably not ever going to get to the bottom of what his purposes are in so much of whatever happens to us. And the teacher says, that's good. That's okay. God is God and you are not. Rest in his sovereignty and goodness. Don't try to find a reason for everything. Don't be holier than thou, trying to super spiritualize everything. Don't trot out the trite cliches when life explodes in your face. Trust God. Rest in his control and goodness. Get together and cry buckets. Think about Jesus again. That trust in God's sovereignty at Gethsemane. And at the cross, that he knew God was in control. He knew God was working out his purpose. And then his tears at the tomb of his friend. His willingness to take the rejection of his people because he trusted his Father. And yet at the same time, that agony as he wept and wept over Jerusalem. But here's the joy. Because he did that, so can we. Because his trust means that we will never be forsaken. No matter the circumstance. His new life means that death is not the enemy it could be. His reign in heaven and his pleading with his Father for us means that we can know grace to live this breath of a life for his glory and for others' good. And as you get these two perspectives in balance, as you learn that death will come and that wisdom has limits, Solomon says finally, you can learn how to live. Because these perspectives, that wisdom is knowing that we will die and therefore we must live life for God's glory. But that wisdom has limits, we will never understand it all. Shatter so many of our difficulties of life if we get hold of it. Look at some of the examples he gives us here. Look there at verse 26. The reality of the death and the sovereignty of God and our inability to explain everything or understand everything or always choose the right helps us, verse 26, avoid lust. Because when we get these perspectives, we get that it's not worth it. Judgment is coming. Eternity's not far away. And eternity is always far better. Far more important than a 10-second look or one night of passion. And anyway, and here's where lots of us struggle with this. God's given you what's best for you now. He's given you your spouse. Oh, he's given you your singleness. Oh, he's given you your struggle in this area perhaps. And maybe you haven't got a clue why. Why isn't he giving me something else? You don't know, but that's the teacher's point. Trust that God knows. And live all you can as you are now. And these two perspectives as well allow you to not get too worried about what other people say there, verses 21 and 22. Because you know reality because of the gospel that you are loved and that the only affirmation that matters is really not that far away. In not too long, folks, we're going to stand before Jesus and hear well done, good and faithful servant. We know that life is breath and therefore it's not worth getting upset over someone saying something that you've probably said about them before anyway. That life is breath, and therefore it's not worth wasting breath on slanging matches. You will, after all, in not that long, be spending eternity with quite a lot of people that you've slagged off over the years. And these two perspectives, final one for now, allow you to avoid getting dragged into the foolishness and greed and nostalgia of verses 7 to 10. Because you know that the reward of God is better than any of that. That he has given you in his kindness and grace these days to live. Stop trying to live in the past or the future. One of the t-shirts I've always wanted and never got round to buying. It's made by a company that is called Old Guys Rule. And the words on the t-shirt say this: the older I get, the better I was. It's true, isn't it? I don't know about any of you. Perhaps it is for guys as we get a bit older. That goal I scored from the halfway line, Lewis saw it, so ask him afterwards, gets better and better every time I tell somebody about it. And it's funny because it's true, isn't it? We all know something of that. How great it was. Do you remember when you were kids at school and your teacher said to you, these are the best days of your life? And you said, you're joking? Got my head flushed down the toilet. That's not great, love. But as your teacher looked back and remembered freedom from bills and mortgage and forgot Faggy's Corner. That's what Solomon says in verse 10, isn't it? We all live like that in some way. We spend a lot of our lives trying to deny the reality of life. We want to believe that we're better than we are, that we're the ones who've got it all figured out, that we control far more than we ever possibly can, that we understand more than we ever actually will. We know what's right for us, God. The teacher says two things. You will die. And Jesus is Lord. Get hold of that fact and therefore live today. Don't live for today, but make sure that you live today for Jesus. We had Brian Adams this morning, didn't we? Do you remember Bon Jovi? It's My Life, that song. He goes through a list of all things he want. He just says, I want to live while I'm alive. That's the call of the teacher here. I just want to live while I'm alive, knowing that I will die, living out life in Jesus, making the most of every opportunity to bring glory to his name as you appreciate his good gifts and his grace poured out on you. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your grace to us in Jesus. Would you give us hearts which just long for him, rejoice in him, because he has given us life in every sense. Would you give us hearts which rest in your grace and live full out for you, that your name might be glorified as we serve one another and our town, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.